Text for today comes from Psalm 139. Read it for you now. O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going outs and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. You hem me in behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirits? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hands will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the lights will become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The light will shine like day. For darkness is as light to you. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my own unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, O Lord. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. My grandfather, my mother's father, had dementia, which meant that as a child, I never felt like I knew him well, or as well as I could. He was kind and quiet and gentle. There was a sort of softness to his personality, as I remember it. When he talked, I remember how he would often slip back from English into Dutch, which was his first, and because of that, his most familiar way of talking. He was difficult to understand often, and frequently got things mixed up. I recall a time when he stopped a conversation partway through to ask my grandmother who my uncle was. My uncle, his son, who lived with them. There were times like that time when my family was able to step back a little bit and laugh about it. Not at him, but about something about that moment in that situation. It's hard to explain, but I think many of you understand. Well, I never saw it as well myself. I imagine there must have been times also when it must have moved them to tears. Our family lived some distance away from them. They were our faraway grandparents, as we called them as children in that day. So I didn't see the full picture of what life with dementia meant for him, for my grandfather. What that gradual and consuming pattern of forgetting must have meant for my grandmother or for my uncle or for my grandfather's other children. I share this by means of reflecting on the fact that the experience of loss of memory is a very common one, such a common one. So many of our families, so many people we know have been touched by it or have experienced it in the past. On my wife Meg's side of the family, we're walking through this right now. For them, it's been a complicated and at times difficult process, full of ups and downs and long stretches of ordinary time in between. This reality of the loss of capacity to remember, a loss of ability to do what was once so familiar, is so very, very common. And it's also so deeply personal and individual. It always comes uniquely and individually and at varying paces and in different forms and intensities. Today we're continuing our series on the theme of God's memory and the life of faith, a series that we've called I Will Not Forget You. We'll be focusing on what it means to be remembered by God, even if we might come to forget. What it means to be held in the memory of God, even if we might come to experience a profound loss of memory in our lives. We know that people fear dementia, that they fear it quite a lot, actually. In one of his books on the topic, theologian and mental health practitioner John Swinton shares a number of statistics from surveys that were completed on the topic. People, he writes, fear dementia, developing forms of dementia, including Alzheimer's and other conditions, more than they fear being diagnosed with cancer, more than cancer. He notes that this is consistent across all ages that are surveyed. Adults, he says, fear what advanced loss of memory might mean for their elderly parents, but also are concerned about what it might mean for them if they come to experience it later in life. And retirees and seniors, when asked, reports it being a significant source of stress and worry for them as well when they think about it. More than finances, heart attacks, cancer, or strokes. People fear dementia. For people of faith, there's another dimension to that fear, I think. The fear that one might come to be, to forget the God they love. It's this fear of not only a sense of loss of self or loss of connection to family and friends, but a loss of connection and closeness to the God they love. This is a real fear, I believe. It makes a lot of sense. If I become upset when I can't remember where I put my keys or where my glasses are or why I came to the store or the names of my next door neighbors, how much more distressing is it to think of the possibility that I might come to forget the God who means more to me than anything else? John Swinton tells this story in his book. It's a true story. This is what he writes. An elderly lady suffering from dementia paced the corridors of the nursing home restlessly, repeating over and over just one word. The staff there were disconcerted, but no one seemed quite sure how to calm her and put her mind to rest. In fact, they were at a loss to understand the reason for her distress. The word she repeated over and over was God, and that was all she said. One day, a nurse got alongside her and walked with her up and down the corridors, until eventually, in a flash of inspiration, she asked the lady, "Are you afraid that you'll forget God?" "Yes, yes," the elderly lady replied emphatically. The nurse was then able to say to her, "You know, even if you should forget God, God will not forget you. God has promised that." For this lady, who was forgetting many things and was aware of it, he writes that assurance was what she needed to hear. She immediately became more peaceful, he writes, and that particular behavior ceased. "No, even if you should forget God," she says, "God will not forget you. God has promised that." Swinton reflects at length in his book on how we might come to trust and rest in the truth that we're remembered by God even if we might come to forget. We are, he writes, firmly held in the memory of God, even if our own memory might come to fail us in time. We're lovingly and lastingly kept in God, even if we might come to experience a profound loss of memory and capacity in our lives. Even if our intellectual and emotional connections might come to weaken or fade in time, God's commitments and connection to us will remain and remain unbroken. Psalm 139 is an ancient poem about precisely those things. It's a song of faith about what it means to be known and remembered by God. It's a reminder that God will not forget us, as the nurse told that frantically pacing woman that day, that God promises us that. We're told, as we read it, that it's a psalm of David. And unlike so many psalms that might speak of God or address the community of faith in general, this one speaks directly to God. It's recorded for us in this intimate first and second person language, which is to say that from the very start, it's written from me to you, from I to you. It's this highly personal prayer that reflects an equally personal connection, spiritual connection between the author and God. Because of this, Psalm 139 has come to be one of the most familiar and beloved of all the Psalms. And as I reflect on it today and seek to hold alongside those experiences of loss of memory and loss of ability, I want to share three aspects of it that I believe that will be helpful for us to consider. Three dimensions of what it means to be known by God and remembered within a life shared with God. They follow more or less the division of the psalm as it's come to be printed in many of our Bibles. And so if you happen to have it open before you, you might be able to see that and recognize it as I go along today. Those three are as follows. The reality that we're known completely, we're known intimately, and that we're known intricately. We're known completely, intimately, and in all of our intricacy by God. To start, we're known completely. You've searched me and known me, David writes. You know every aspect of my life, my every activity. You're aware of when I sit down and pay attention when I rise. You know, God, when I get up and go out during the day, and you're aware of when I return home and lie down in my bed at night. There's no part of my life that's hidden from God. There's no time or season in our lives that's outside of God's knowing, we read. We're known by God in the fullness of who we are, from our very first breath to our very last, including then, we might say, even through the journeys of cognitive loss. You search out my path, the writer tells God. You're acquainted with all my ways. Which is truly something to consider, isn't it? That we're so completely known, so fully known, that each one of us is so fully known throughout the full course of our days. That there's one who could do that, there's someone who could know in that way, who could know and remember each and every one of us in that capacity, in that way. One who's both behind us and before us, hemming us in, as the writer says. This knowledge, such knowledge, is too wonderful for me, David writes. It's so high I cannot attain it. We're known completely. That's the first. The second is that we're known intimately. To be known completely is not all comforting if it's the kind of knowing of some distant, detached, far off and uncaring minds. In fact, the fact that God is familiar with every facet of our existence might in fact seem threatening to us if we view it as the way that one might be viewed through a security camera or the surveillance of a satellite or the way one might be tracked digitally. It's true that nothing can be kept secret from God, but it's only comforting, as it's intended to be here, if we understand it as being known and remembered intimately, known closely and personally and loving by a God who's presence to you, by one who's with you, who goes alongside you, who dwells within you wherever you go. Where can I go from your spirit, the writer asks? Where can I flee from your presence? Here again, it's not like being pursued, badgered by some kind of unwanted or intrusive presence in our lives. But instead, the assurance that, as the Apostle Paul would come to write much later, that nothing in all of creation is able to separate us from the love of God. That there's no place in all of creation that we could ever go, and no experience that we could ever go through in which God would fail to be with us. We're known completely, and we're known intimately. Thirdly, we're known in all of our intricacy. We know that a profound loss of memory can leave us with feelings of loss of self, loss of identity. It can deeply threaten, I think, our sense of personhood, both for ourselves as we think of it or for those we love. We might hear people say things like, she's not herself anymore, or if only you could have known him back then, before all this, or they're there, but they're not really there. Be attentive to that and be sensitive to the ache and the sense of loss there. It's all very real. But also coming back to these beautiful words of this psalm, in which we're reminded that we are and they are God's beloved handiwork and remain such from the very beginning to the very ends. It was you who made me, the psalm writer tells God. You knit me together from the start, like a kind of beautiful and complex craft work. We were God's creations when we were first formed, and in those earliest months and years of our life, for which we have no memories, and during which we had so little language, so few words. So we're not one bit less God's dearly designed ones if we come to lose our grasp on language or lose track of what we know in that same way in our later years. I've often heard from family caring for members with dementia that to those observing, it can seem in some ways like a kind of return to childlikeness in terms of the shifts and the shift to dependence that takes place. We're reminded then that our worth and dignity as people made by God and made in God's image is not in any way diminished, even if our physical abilities and cognitive capacities come to decline to that sort of level again later on. If I find myself looking at old photographs of my grandfather when he was much younger and wondering who he might have been in that time, what he might have been like before all of that, I have to catch myself then and remind myself and remember that he was him the whole way through. He was him the whole way through, lovingly and carefully woven together by God who knew from eternity what each of his days would hold and who held him together and held him all the while. Considering all of this and considering all of that, David is once again moved to wonder as we continue on through these verses. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. I try to count them. They are more than the sands. I awake and I'm so with you. God's knowing and God's remembering are far greater than our own, he exclaims. Beyond anything we could understand. Higher than ours as the heavens are above the earth, as the prophet Isaiah would come to say. Which is a comfort, again, I think, for us. When we experience the limits and the loss of those things in our lives, the limits of our understandings and the loss of understanding in our lives. We're known completely, we're known intimately, and we're known intricately. Remembered by God, so even if we might come to forget, we're firmly held in the memory of God, even if our own memory might come to fail us in time. Coming back to that story that John Swinton shared, of the woman pacing the hallways of the care home, repeating God's name over and over, worried sick that she'd fail to remember it one day. Like her, many of us might fear that if we begin to forget, we might be forgotten. Forgotten by God, as perhaps she was so anxious about in that time, but perhaps also by others as well. We might feel that if our brain cells begin to deteriorate and we come to be seen as absent of minds, we might come to be absent in the minds of others as well. That if our memory might fade, that we fear that we might fade from people's memories, from the memories of others. That as the neural connections in our minds go, we might wonder if our lives' connections might go as well. My grandfather continued to live at home through this all and remained a loved and well-cared for presence through this time. Yet as I saw something of that, nothing intentional, nothing deliberate, just the way he would sit quiet and still off to the side on the couch while everyone else visited and talked. So we remember that it's part of our commitments as communities of faith and as families of faith to not forget those who've begun to forget or come to forget, to remember those who struggle to remember or have lost the ability to. This is a part of our commitments and calling at all times, but especially maybe in this time. It's maybe taking on a different level of urgency, a sense of urgency and importance in this time. This time when As a society and around the world, we're maybe waking up in a lot of ways to some of the ways that we fail to provide adequate support and care to some of these most vulnerable ones, some of these people experiencing these things. And this time when our friends and family with dementia and Alzheimer's and other intellectual limitations are isolated from us, when we're not able to go see them and they're not able to leave to come visit with us. Each week I continue to hear stories of family members making phone call after phone call, gently reminding and gently reminding again. Stories of families gathered by windows, looking in as the one on the other side looks out back at them. Families who hold tablets in hands while staff on the other side hold up tablets for their loved ones, just reaching and hoping that recognition would take place through that. We're reminded in these times of the importance of physical presence and connection. How significant that is when recognition and recollection come to be lost. And how there really is no replacement for that. And we're reminded again, which is the focus today, that though we might come to forget, we will not be forgotten by our God who has promised never to forget us, the God who relentlessly remembers, the God on whose hands our names are said to be engraved, as Isaiah wrote. And not forgotten, remembers by community and caregivers, like my grandmother and like the nurse to the woman in the story, and like so many, many of you as well, who've made it their commitments in their lives, tireless work to do the same. Dementia is so very common and yet also so very personal. It's complex and sometimes surprising. We sometimes might be startled by what comes back or what comes out in a moment. I'm struck often by how my grandfather, despite it all, would be able to remember and readily re-enter the embodied ritual of mealtime prayers, something he had done and words he had said over and over again over the course of his life. I often hear family members say of those in advanced stages of these conditions that they often sense there's more going on beneath the surface than we see. There's more, maybe at times, than meets the eye. That we're wrong when we automatically assume that nothing is registering, that we ought to come generously and share generously with them, with that in mind. John Swinton describes it as still water that runs deep. It's a really beautiful way of describing it, I think. This is a mystery to us. Our family, again, is walking through this right now. In ways that sometimes, some days, feel heavy and heartbreaking. And it's in many ways still far too open to talk about it in any sort of way right now. And so we're seeking a word of comfort in a way through it as well. We're listening for this too. As for my grandfather, he passed away several years ago. And if time had come to lose its meaning for him because of this disorder that took hold of his mind, I believe he rediscovered the fullness of it in God's eternity. Psalm 139 concludes on a beautiful note in that very spirit. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. It's this invitation for the God who knows to know us even more deeply and more fully. Prayer for a life humbly and faithfully opened up before God. See if there's any offensive way in me, the writer says, and lead me in the way everlasting. Lead me in the way everlasting. Lead me on, God, from this time into time without ends. Guide me from this moment into eternity. It's a prayer for all of us. Psalm 139 is a prayer for each and every one of us, I believe. Because the reality is that we all know in parts, and we all understand in parts, as Paul writes to the church in Corinth. Even with the sharpest of mind and clearest of memory, We only at best see things as a reflection in a mirror, he says. We know in parts. But then, Paul tells them, when God restores all creation and we join together in resurrection life, then we shall know fully, even as we are fully known. Until that day when we and those we love come to know fully, we rest in being fully known by God, completely, intimately, and intricately known, as David the poem writer would come to understand it to be here. So for those of you who are family and caregivers journeying through this right now, may you be blessed today. You know that these realities can sometimes manifest in demanding and repetitious and sometimes physically in exhausting kinds of ways. So may you find strength for your work as you daily remember and seek to provide care, especially in this time of distancing. And for those of you who are maybe part of the statistics that I shared and are filled with feelings of anxiousness when you think about this possibility for yourself or for your family, may you find as well what you need to carry on, trusting that we're remembered by God and will be, even if we might come to forget. And likewise, for those of you who are truly directly in the midst of this right now yourselves, for those of you who are experiencing this right now, whether it's the struggle to find the words the way you used to, or to remember the things you were able to do before and how to do them, may you know that you are known and will be known and remembered by God, our God of love, no matter what. That God, as that wise nurse said that day, has promised us that.